Welcome to the latest edition of the Starbin' Aids podcast. After a week we'd probably rather ignore, I'm Chris Holt here with James Shield and Danny Hall, as usual, to look over those last two games, which reaped one measly point, and perhaps try to eke out any positives that came from those two games. Of course, we'll always look ahead to the next match at Stoke on Saturday and see where it is that United need to improve to get themselves back on track. This is the Starblades podcast. And there we go. I'm going positive, lads. There's been a lot of misery this week. If you look on social media, you'd think that they were playing in League Two and ready to drop into the National League after a week. But yeah, let's start with Saturday, which actually, if Tuesday hadn't came along, Saturday wasn't actually that bad. Is that fair to say, really? They weren't great. They got a point. You kind of thought on Saturday evening, right, that's fair enough. Haven't had a great game, we'll put that to bed and move on.
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely fair enough. I'm just going to say, Chris, you've got me so pumped up again there with your...
I should do this in the morning with my kids, get them ready for school.
If Connor Benn does have to pull out and Chris Eubank Jr. needs an opponent, then I'm straight down to London. I can tell you that. It's
don't do any tests before you go.
No, yeah, you can test me. I'll be all fine. It'll just be overdosing on tea, I think. That's probably the only thing. I think that's a fair summary of the week, to be honest. Birmingham City, Sheffield United's performance against them, it wasn't free-flowing, it wasn't great. I don't think anybody expected it to be. Paul Heckingbottom certainly didn't expect it to be that type of game when you read his comments beforehand. And I think if you put the game into context as well, if you look at the circumstances surrounding it, Sheffield United hugely handicapped by the international break. Listen, it's great they've got the players going away. It's great they've got so many away. It's a reflection of the quality within the squad. But it does mean that they have very, very little preparation times available to them after an international break. Birmingham City came, did exactly what we expected and everybody expected Birmingham City to do, and that was disrupt the rhythm, disrupt the flow of the game, but carry a threat themselves, as you would have expected of a team with Troy Deeney leading the line. And they did that. They did that. And I don't think it wasn't a great performance by Sheffield United. It wasn't a bad one either. I think, as you've said, the problem is what's coloured it is what happened on Tuesday night against Queen's Park Rangers. And it wasn't great. I don't think it was quite as bad. I don't know what Danny thinks, what you think, Chris, as some people are suggesting. I thought they actually shaded the first half on points, but obviously not goals. But then they just unravelled as the game went on. I thought they looked mentally tired. I thought they looked physically tired. There was obviously more injuries, which we'll get onto later. Possibly that fatigue is linked to the injuries as well. Although I think there's certainly an issue there that Sheffield United are going to have to get to the bottom of, be it something that's going systemically wrong behind the scenes or just bad fortune. What I will say is, at the end of the week, Sheffield United are still top of the Championship table. And I think fair play to them as well that they are top when you look at some of the issues that they've had to contend with this season. I do think that actually reflects well on the side. But yeah, a big improvement is going to be required at Stoke City this weekend. I think everybody connected with the club would admit that.
Danny, on Saturday they put Rita Kadra in. Didn't really work, did it? And certainly Tuesday's team selection reflected that, albeit Bogle had the benefit of an extra couple of days preparation, and maybe he wasn't quite fit enough. I would suggest that's probably the case for Saturday. That left side is becoming an issue, really, isn't it? Given that Bogle looked like he may have picked up another knock on Tuesday night.
it's just the same old story every week now, isn't it? I think you're just kind of playing bingo with who's going to be the next kind of victim to the injury curse. I think first and foremost, it's the last time on this podcast that I predict 6 points from six. Bearing in mind that they ended up with one, didn't quite see it ending up the way it did. Just a very frustrating couple of games, weren't it? I think that was the main feeling of Bramall Lane. You know, a lot of frustration at the referee and the other team's gamesmanship and time-wasting tactics. I think that's fair to say. Which, you know, teams are entitled to do that. If the referee is going to let them get away with it, you know, he's there to kind of police the laws, isn't he? And if he's not going to enforce it and you need to do that, then I don't think you can criticise teams too much. It's just horrible to watch, isn't it? It's just so frustrating to watch. Why, I think the Senny Dieng was warned after 16 minutes on Tuesday, which, you know, kind of give you an indication of how QPR approach things. But to be fair to them, I think they defended really well, as did Birmingham. Everything that United did throw at them, whether by luck or by good defending or a combination of both, they kept a clean sheet, which, you know, not many people do at Bramall Lane these days. And yeah, as you said before, I think Kadra's experiment, I see the thinking, I do see the way, or I see the reason why he was preferred at home against a team that you'd expect United to be on the front foot against. I did have a smile when Paul mentioned that he told Reader pretty much don't worry about defending, just get forward. And I think he definitely took that on board. There was a chance for Birmingham when Reece deflected it over the bar, and I think Reed had just crossed the halfway line, so he didn't exactly bust the gut to get back. But I suppose the sacrifice, what you sacrifice going the other way, Paul would have weighed it up and thought it was worth the gamble. But for me, I thought they just seemed a lot more balanced with, and that might sound a little bit strange considering Jaden's a right-footed right back. But I thought with him at left wing back, I thought they just seemed a little bit more balanced. I thought the probably the biggest beneficiary of that was Reece next to him. I thought with Reader going forward, I think Reece kind of had to do the defensive job of two people, didn't he? But I think you saw with Jaden there and that sort of more natural defensive attributes that he has, I think that freed Reece up a lot to get forward early on, especially. And I thought they looked quite threatening down the left. For the first 10, 15 minutes, you know, it was all one-way traffic, wasn't it, against QPR. We were all kind of just sitting, watching, you know, it was like a training game. I think we said that at the time. It was like attack versus defence. But they didn't get ahead, which is what, you know, Paul spoke this week about the time wasted in the gamesmanship. The way to stop that is score early on, and it all goes away, doesn't it? But they didn't manage to do that. The longer it goes on, the sort of more frustration that builds. And then they get a goal that, you know, it's a fair finish, but I think you can look at the defending, can't you, for both of them, really. They're both the goals against Birmingham and QPR. Quite un-Sheffield United type goals to concede, which will be frustrating. But then I suppose, on the other hand, you know, do you look at that and go, at least we know what we've done wrong? Do you know what I mean? We know how to avoid scoring, you know, conceding those goals. You know, if Basham stays with his man, if Sander gets more on that header, it doesn't end up at Troy Deeney's feet, he's possibly winning that game. If, I think it was Tommy Doyle, if he follows his man, Willock on Tuesday night, that possibly doesn't go in. And you take, you know, another point, and, you know, the unbeaten run goes on, that kind of thing. So maybe that is a little bit of, I'm not going to say comfort, but, you know, maybe a little bit less frustrating for the coaching staff that they know what's going wrong and they know how to fix it. But yeah, going back to your original point, which I think it was about Jaden, sorry, I've rambled on a bit down a bit of a tangent. Yeah, I think they look a lot more balanced with him there. Obviously, it's still a square peg in a round hole, and that he's right-footed, and, you know, that does limit him going on the outside. But I think there were signs of his performance, especially after being out for so long, nearly 8 months. I mean, I saw a lot of criticism of him on social media afterwards, which I thought was harsh. I thought he was my star man in the game, the best of a, not going to say a bad bunch, the best of an average bunch, I'll say. And I thought he deserves a lot of credit for stepping up after so long out. He looked absolutely dead on his feet after about an hour and continued for a little bit longer. So it'll be interesting to see whether he is fit enough this weekend or whether it'll be someone else taking their ticket to play left wing back. I don't think me and Shieldsy are far off getting the call, I don't think, at this rate.
Yeah, God help him.
I'm busy Saturday, by the way. I can't.
that's another option gone, Chris. Yeah. I think, in fairness to Raider, I think he did as well as could be expected.
Yeah, he did. That's exactly it. He did. I don't think, whenever everybody looked at the team sheet on Saturday, I don't think anybody thought to themselves, you know, we're going to get a, you know, prime Enda Stevens performance out of this lad.
Yeah, here. Absolutely. He'll
do his best he can within the abilities that he has.
Absolutely. And it is something that Sheffield United could, if they're forced to. They now know they can do that in the future, because he wasn't a desert. Listen, he wasn't a great wing back. He's not a wing back, as we all know. But I don't think it was a disaster either. As I said, I think he did as well as could be expected. I think just a couple of points I'd like to make as well here. One is that Sheffield United cannot afford to get too hung up on this gamesmanship, time-wasting issue. Yes, I think Paul Heckingbottom is right to mention it. Yes, it's something that does need addressing in football, purely from a value for money point of view, because people, although clubs will tell you otherwise, people do pay an awful lot of money to come and watch football, especially in the middle of a cost of living crisis. And they're going to want something for their money. Football does need to be a product. I hate to sound like a marketing money man, but there are so many other things people can do with their money these days, and football would be making a grave mistake if it took its audience for granted. So it does need to do something about that. But I'll give you a scenario here. If it's not taking an age over a set piece, and listen, Sheffield United have done it in the past. I can remember when Nigel Adkins took a team to Manchester United in the FA Cup. And we weren't complaining then when Sheffield United were absolutely killing the game. It was the right thing to do. It was exactly the right thing to do. And they did it for as long as they possibly could. So QPR were entitled to do that. But the scenario I'm going to give you here is, if it's not taking an age over a set piece or a throw-in, what if a player goes down with cramp? What position does that put the referee in there? Because footballers, as much as we all love football and as much as there's some lovely guys in it, it's not exactly known for its moral probity. So all teams will do is find something else to break up the flow of the game. They'll put the referee in a position. I'm injured. What's he supposed to do? Because we'll be the first ones jumping on the referee's back when he finally tires of it, waves play on and ignores a serious injury. And it won't be footballers and coaches that are telling people to do that get the blame. It'll be match officials. So I don't think Sheffield United can afford to get too hung up on that. Although, as I've said, they're right to reference it. And I get why Paul Heckingbottom has, because although he can't say this, we can. He's applying a little bit of pressure on the match official this weekend, although I don't think it'll be so much of a problem at Stoke. But he's certainly just, you know, marking referees' cards for games coming up. The second point I just want to make is, I do actually think it was the right thing against Birmingham to play Raider there, because as we referenced at the time, I think if you were to change formation, suddenly you're disrupting two or three other areas of the team and potentially weakening those, when you may as well have just done weakened one. And that's something that Paul Heckingbottom pretty much agreed with, I think it was fair to say, in his post-match summing up.
On the time wasting, it's actually not time wasting now anymore, is it? And as you say, the problem is you can do something about time wasting, in that you just stop your watch immediately. And I've always been a big advocate, actually, of time being taken away from the referee. Having somebody outside of, you know, the fourth official, for instance, being the one who takes responsibility, and whenever the ball's stopped, the clock stopped. But the problem is, it's actually the breaking up of the play, which you can't actually do anything about. And as you say, James, teams are going to do it, and there's no point crying about it. It's up to Paul Heckingbottom now, and his team to find a way of combating that.
Absolutely, yeah.
And he said earlier, the only way of combating that is to actually go up, and then that puts it to bed.
if you're top of the table or towards the top of the table, it comes with a territory. It's part and parcel of being with a good team, of being a good team. Manchester City deal with this every week. Liverpool deal with it every week. Chelsea deal with it every week. Inter, Napoli in Italy, they deal with it. Barcelona, Real Madrid in Spain. And so does every side at the top of their respective tables, no matter where it be in Europe or across the world. It's not right. It's not great to watch. I think that's actually a really good idea, is you just stop the clock and make sure that the ball is effectively in play for 90 minutes. That's the best way of stopping it. But Sheffield United, they can't afford to get too fixed up, too hung up on this, because it's going to happen and it's part and parcel of the game. You often hear managers and coaches talking about, I want really cute players. And this is what they're on about, because they'll applaud it when it suits.
Yeah.
Simple as.
There will come a point where United do. You know, if United go 1-0 up away to Norwich, whenever that may be, I can't remember when that is, but or whatever, later on in the season, they will do it, and you have to hold your hands up and say, well.
Let's hope later this season, as you've said there, or Sheffield United, come April, are going into a game, they're 2-0 up, and if they get the win, they're promoted back to the Premier League. Does anybody on here honestly imagine that that Paul Heckingbottom is suddenly going to bring on three strikers and go for that third or fourth goal? He'll tell you he will, and I'm not criticising Paul here. He'll tell you he will because it fits the narrative that they want to create, but they won't, and they'd be stupid to do that. And when you see players going down with cramp there, we'll all be writing, myself included, that, oh, that's really clever. Look at that. They're intelligent. That's matchcraft. Not gamesmanship. That's matchcraft. So it will suit. And you're quite right. Sheffield United will do it themselves at some point this season. So don't get too hung up on it. Yes, bring it to the attention of the match officials. Absolutely. 100% right to do that. But, and I'm not saying Sheffield United are doing this, by the way, but if they continue to make an issue of it, there's a danger that this might happen. But don't use it as an excuse. They're not at the moment, they're just referencing it. But don't become obsessed by it. Don't become fixated by it, and don't use it as an excuse.
Danny, earlier on the week, yesterday, I think, I think you wrote about the fact that, you know, the big players, the players that you look to in tight games, just weren't able to bring it out. Sanderberg was fairly average. He's fairly average on Saturday and almost anonymous at long periods of the game on Tuesday. Illiman and Dye, similar. He kind of started like a house on fire on Tuesday and then completely disappeared from the game. So those are the two players that are two of the players that you look to in tight games to try and make something happen. And that didn't happen. What that means, I'm being very careful about this because I think he's got more credit in the bank than anybody else. But when you get players who you kind of rely on week in, week out, having bad games, namely Chris Basham, that's when things start to kind of fall. Because if you're not getting the attacking threat and the guile and the drive from players like Illiman and I and Sanderberg, then you need to be tight. And unfortunately, Chris Basham had a very, very rare off day on Tuesday night.
Yeah. That's the pedestal you create yourself, isn't it? When you're consistently the star man in terms of Sander and Ollie. I put Ollie in there as well. Obviously, yeah. five in seven. I mean, you know, he's a kind of informed striker that you look to make things happen. I think it's fair to say that all three of those have had probably, you know, quiet to average to poor games in the last couple of last couple of games. I know we've spoke before on this podcast about the the joy of stats and things like that. And I know that Shields is not a massive fan of the old expected goals, but I was looking at that, and United are quite outperforming their XG by quite a bit, which suggests to me that, you know, in those tight moments, the big players are stepping up and making things happen, you know, beyond what you would normally expect. And like I said, the last couple of games, that's not really happened. I mean, Illerman, when he skipped across a couple of men on Tuesday night, I think it was, and looked to find that bottom corner. You know, this season, we've seen him do that so many times. And as soon as it opens up, you just kind of think, oh, goal. Do you know what I mean? You just think it's just destined for the bottom corner. And he rolls it wide. Sander, I mean, there were a couple of, you know, decent moments, you know, a couple of, you know, I hear people saying that it was absolutely woeful. I don't quite think it was as bad as that. I accept it wasn't, didn't hit his normal high standards. But yeah, they're the players, aren't they? When it's tight and when you need something to happen, rightly or wrongly, you kind of look at those players, don't you, and say, you know, we need a bit of magic here. But away at Preston, when they weren't great, Illerman scores a goal, you know, out of nothing, but he scores a goal, you know, a bit of magic. And then it all goes from there. You look at your players, don't you? Your big men to kind of step up. And the last couple of games, that's not really happened. So, you know, where else does it really come from? If you effective front three of Sander, Illerman and Ollie are not firing, you know, there's not a, you know, you've got an out of position left back in place. You know, where else does it really come from? That's the problem they have to solve, really, because you can't really go through the season relying on three players. But that's where your midfield have to chip in, isn't it? Your centre halves, John Egan said this week he needs to score more goals after being prolific, really, on international duty with a couple of brilliant finishes. And you need your other big men to step up, really. You can't just rely on the three. And that's a problem they're going to have to solve. What do they do when those three are not firing? Because it's going to happen, isn't it? Sanders come back from international duty, having played two games in two and not looked anywhere near what he was like before he went away. Illerman, you can't.
And he had a fair amount of criticism while he was away from the Norwegian press as well for his performances.
Yeah, what that's done to his confidence levels, maybe perhaps he's come back a little bit less adventurous and confident at the top of his game than perhaps when he went away. Illerman, you possibly can't use that excuse since he played about 8 minutes of either game. So perhaps the tiredness excuse is not there. Still a young lad, isn't he? Still. In football terms, I know I think he's 22, so you know he's not exactly a teenager anymore. But in terms of football, he's possibly a year into his senior football career, isn't he? So I don't know if that expectation's weighing on him or not. I don't know the lad well enough to know that. But the last couple of games, he's not been at his best. And then Ollie has just not really had. I think he's really had a. Didn't really have a sniff, did he, on Tuesday night? Except he scored. Brilliant goal on Saturday. That seems like an eternity away now. But on Tuesday, I think he was getting involved in grappling with the centre-half again. It was almost like the old Ollie, wasn't it? Where he was more concerned about having a bit of a scrap than anything else. And then he annoyed, let's say, his manager at the final whistle by getting booked and being suspended for this weekend. So it's not been... it weren't a great day all round on Tuesday, but like I said, the big players, when you look to them for a bit of magic, it wasn't there. And you know, predictably, United suffered as a result.
You're right, Danny. I'm not a big fan of XG because, for a couple of reasons. One, I've never known a title or a match be won on XG. Although, reading some of the material that's put out there these days, I'm beginning to think I must have missed one somewhere. Two, I shake my head. In a couple of years' time, we'll be talking about PQ, XTIJ metrics. Now, I don't know what the hell that stands for, but something else will have come into fashion that now supposedly dictates the outcome of a football match. I will say as well on top of this, and we're as guilty of this, we have to do it at times. And once again, it's not a luxury that Paul Heckingbottom has got. It's not a luxury we've got, because otherwise this podcast would probably last about 2 minutes. Sometimes it just happens as well. It's called form. It was only, I think, 3 or 4 weeks ago when everything was going well that ourselves, supporters, coaching staff, players were all telling us there will come a point in this season, because it's a long old campaign, when things don't quite click. And we all nodded our heads sagely and went, absolutely, that's 100% right. Well, this is one of those periods. And now suddenly, what's wrong with the team? Why is he not doing that? Why is he not doing that? It's terrible. You'll never get a pro license badge for saying this, but sometimes it just happens.
I think it's probably
if it's still happening in a month's time, there's an issue.
I think if we're being pragmatic about it, we could probably say there's been a perfect storm of the international break breaking up the momentum, plus added injuries to an already kind of
lengthy
injury list. Like you say, if they're still picking up 1 point a week in November, then that's when the difficulties arise and you start to wonder if they can or what they need to do to get out of it. As things stand, they've had a bad week. And it's probably the first, and in fact, it is definitely the first bad week they've had this season. So to get to October and had your first bad week, it's probably not, you're not doing too badly. And obviously,
especially with a damn good championship squad sat in the treatment room at the moment.
Yeah, exactly.
As well. Yeah.
Exactly. Okay, we'll not look back too much more, and we'll try and look ahead. Stoke City on Saturday. They haven't really got going under their new manager as yet. It's difficult to know what to expect from them, really, because Alex Neil's obviously dealing with a team that he didn't put together. He's probably trying to put his own stamp on things, albeit without having the players that he would probably quite like to do that with. I always find the longer poor the average form goes along, particularly at a team like that, you become less likely to want to play them because you kind of feel like it's going to turn at some point, really, isn't it? And Stoke kind of fall into that bracket a little bit. They're clearly a fairly decent, if not exceptional, championship team. They probably can't continue to be as average as they have been over the past 6 weeks or whatever.
I know we said we're not looking back, but I thought this last season, I can remember going there, looking at Stoke's team sheet and thinking, how is this team struggling?
Yeah.
How are they producing such mind-numbingly boring football? And they didn't in that game. I wonder if that's a little insight, a little indicator into what's going on there, perhaps. But I think this will be a tough game. Everyone will be rolling their eyes when you say that, because it's what you always say. I'm looking forward to the day we come on here and saying they will absolutely spank that team at the weekend. But of course we won't. But no, genuinely, I think this will be a really tough game. Stoke have got some good players. You're right, Alex Neil hasn't quite got them firing yet. I suspect he probably won't until after Christmas, and Sunderland fans won't like to hear me say this, and I get why not. I just really like Alex Neil as a manager. There's nothing too flash, there's nothing too sexy about him, but he's just good at what he does. His CV shows that. He's a very, very good manager, and I thought it was intriguing to see his Sunderland side, when of course he was still in charge at the Stadium of Light, come to Bramall Lane in August, I believe it was. Yeah, it was August.
Yeah.
And just have a real go. And they caused Sheffield United a lot of problems. United didn't like the fact that Sunderland came and had a go at them. I think it took them by surprise a little bit. I genuinely do. And even when they went down to 10 men, Sunderland continued to cause problems. I would be stunned. And I think Alex Neil would be making a huge error if he didn't look, even though the personnel are different, if he didn't look at that match and use it as a blueprint for this one. Stoke are at home. Fans can be loud. So I think they'll look to try and grab this game by the scruff of the neck. I don't think we'll hear Paul Heckingbottom complaining about gamesmanship and time-wasting tactics after this one.
Danny, they're coming off the back of a decent result, actually, at the weekend, or in midweek. When you're playing against a good team and you nick a point right at the end, it can often feel like a win. So they might see that draw with Burnley with a late equaliser on Tuesday or Wednesday, whenever it was, as a bit of a boost for them. They probably should go into this game with their tails up a little bit.
That's the kind of reaction that you look for, isn't it, as a manager? And as Shields have said, it's a massively tough test. I'd snatch your hand off for a point right now, especially. I would anyway. You know, that's kind of the blueprint for promotion, isn't it? Winning your home game, especially tough away games like this. But especially after the last two games for United, I think point this weekend. Not that I don't think they'll go there with that as their primary target. I think, you know, as always, they'll go and try and win the game. But I think if he offered that now to Paul and his coaching staff, I wonder what they'd say. You know what? We'd take that. With all the things that were said before, with how, you know, the last couple of games have panned out, I think just to get back on the horse, as it were, you know, kind of start that next unbeaten run. I think if they can do that against this weekend, I think they'd take that. I think we'd all take that, I think. If they could nick 3 points with a bit of time wasted at the end as well, I think that'd be even better. After everything we said on here. But yeah, they're one of the toughest points to go, I think, this season. We had this conversation, didn't we, last season, James, about how on earth are these where they are? How are these? And there was nothing about them, were there? There was no sort of identity to them at all. They were just kind of drifting. You think for a club that size, for the, you know, the remarkable, you know, cash behind them, I know they come out of the Premier League now, but still, you know, with all their sort of recent signs in the Premier League and all that, you think there's just nothing about them here. So hopefully that, I don't know whether that'll have changed under Alex already. I don't know. He's not been there long. He was a bit of time to sort that kind of things out. But yeah, it was just a strange sort of, just meandering, weren't they, last year in the Championship? And you just think, we came away thinking that was just strange. So hopefully that carries on this weekend with 3 points for the away side. But yeah, should have definitely just looked there. They're 20th in the league. You know, that's not a team that should be 20th in the league. So, you know, they can't take too much sort of credibility from that. I think it'll be an incredibly tough game. And like I said, if you offered me a point now, I would absolutely snatch your hand off for that.
No midweek fixtures this week, of course. I had to check that because I get so lost in fixtures. I just had to make sure before I said that. That's probably, we'll just wrap it up with this, but that's probably a good thing. In fact, it's almost certainly a good thing for United at the minute, isn't it? Just to get people, they've had the international break, but I think, as we said, they had less than half a dozen first team players there, I think, during that period. Then they've gone into a double header off the back of that. This kind of week could be, I won't say crucial, because we're not in that kind of zone as yet, but we're in a position now where a good week on the training ground could reap big rewards with, you know, having less to have to deal with in terms of matches.
I think that's absolutely spot on. You've just taken the words out of my mouth. I was going to say it's the time on the training ground that is going to be so important and so valuable to United and their coaching staff right now. We know they can get results with big players out injured because they wouldn't be going to Staffordshire at the weekend top of the table if they couldn't. So I think it's when things aren't quite firing, I think it is. It's that time on the training ground that's going to be so, so important. We've seen before in the past how little breaks, pauses in seasons can allow teams who have been struggling to reset. Well, Sheffield United aren't struggling in terms of the table, but they are just by their own high standards. And I think, again, that's important to remember. Just struggling a little bit at the moment over the past couple of days. Again, I stress days with results. So, yeah, that I think you're right. That week on the training pitch is going to be something that Paul and his his staff are going to really welcome.
Okay, that's us for this week. We'll be back probably next Thursday to look ahead to the next match. Again, I didn't look ahead there. I didn't look to see who they're playing. But we'll reflect certainly on Stoke City. And hopefully we'll be a little bit more buoyed by the results this time around rather than the week we've just had. So thanks, James. Thanks, Danny. And thanks, everybody, for listening and watching. And we'll see you next week.